WGN, Emily Stewart's back, senior correspondent at Business Insider with the definition. Let's start here, Emily, of quiet vacationing. What exactly is that?
So there's no set definition of quiet vacationing, and it can kind of encompass a lot of behaviors, but basically it means, you know, not quite working when you're working. So it might mean traveling to a faraway place and maybe not telling your boss while still getting your work in, or you know, not working but keeping your mouth moving while you're sitting at home and maybe doing some chores or watching TV. So it basically means, you know, not working when you should be.
I see. And obviously that's an opportunity afforded only to people who are working remotely then, right?
Yeah, in general, yes.
What's this business of keeping your mouse moving? The company knows if your mouse is moving and therefore you're quote-unquote working?
I mean, I think a lot of people do that, right? If you have Slack or different chat bots, I've done this before at different jobs, and the button or the little dot becomes, you know, gray if you're not online. And if you move your mouse around, it shows you're active and you're green. So people buy you mouse jigglers to jiggle their mouses around. I have one friend.
You can buy a mouse jiggler.
With a pen.
Wow.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I did not know. Well, okay. So then the idea is that maybe I'm going to go to some place for vacation for the week or for a few days. I'm not going to tell the boss. In that case, if I'm a remote worker, they don't know where I am, maybe. Do people tend to work when they're not? I mean, maybe it doesn't matter if you're going to a resort, but you're still getting the work done. Or people, how do you get away with it then?
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, I mean, my general feeling on this is that if you're on the beach in Mexico, if you're a cabin in the woods and you're getting your work done, to what extent does it matter, right? If I'm sitting on my couch in Brooklyn, New York, where I live, or if I'm in a cabin in the woods, if I'm getting my work done, it really shouldn't matter. And it depends on the relationship you have with your boss. I think, you know, the rub here for me a little bit, and when you talk to experts, is that that's not really a vacation. And why are you doing that? Are you doing that because you have a really great boss and a good relationship with work where you have that flexibility? Or are you doing that because you feel like you cannot actually take a real break and you never take a real break? And that's where the problem is.
Yeah, I see that. And this isn't maybe even the solution. That's something that you and the boss need to organize so that you get real time away from work and you don't have a guilty feeling about it. Who is doing this? Younger workers more than older workers?
Yeah, I mean, according to one poll, about a third of workers are doing it, but millennials in particular are doing the quiet vacationing. And again, this can mean a lot of different things, whether that means they're just working from somewhere else or they're really pretending to work when they're not. You know, people are engaging in a lot of different behaviors, too. People will schedule messages outside of work hours so that it looks like they're working more than they are, or, you know, those sorts of things. And, but those are, you know, behaviors that are also rewarded sometimes, right, where your boss wants to feel like you're going above and beyond. And that is a work culture question, right? Like, you shouldn't feel like your boss wants to see you send a message at 9 p.m. That should be a bad sign, not something that's seen as good. Like, oh, you're such a great worker.
Yeah. One last thing about that. I think there's plenty of people working from home who realize they don't have any calls in the second half of the day, and they're going to go to lunch and then shop. And if their phone rings, they'll pick it up, but they kind of get away with it. And I don't know what to make of that. I mean, as long as you're sufficiently productive, maybe it doesn't matter, but you're shopping and out to lunch. That's not what you're getting paid for. So how do you score that, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I mean, one expert I talked to for this kind of said, you know, we're all adults here to some extent, right? As long as you're getting your work done, what does it matter? And that is, again, sort of a company culture question and a question of your boss. You know, she brought up to me, this isn't necessarily remote work. You know, she said she used to work in investment banking, and then you sweep their suit jackets on the back of their chairs after they went home to make it look like they were still around the office. So this isn't a new phenomenon, but I do think to some extent, if you're getting your work done, you know, who cares when you're doing it? Who cares if you're out shopping?
Yeah, it's a very interesting fundamental question. Did we hire you so that you work 40 hours, or did we hire you so a job gets accomplished? Which is it, boss? And Emily Stewart talks in a piece at Business Insider about quiet vacationing. Emily, let's visit again. Thanks for saying hi.
Yeah, thank you.
Our Bree Fowler. Look at that, Bree. You're now on the staff here. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. I'll be awaiting my first paycheck.
Yeah, that's why I paused. Bree Fowler is a senior reporter at CNET.com. So the White House has EV grants, electric vehicle grants, that are going out to states, including Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. What do those states have in common?
Well, they're automotive states, but they're also key battleground states in the election this year.
How much money is going to EV makers or suppliers in those areas?
It amounts to totally, in total, the grants are about $2 billion. A lot of it will be going to those states, but they'll also be going to other states as well, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, and Virginia. So it's kind of all over the place.
And I don't mean to make that sound so jaded or manipulative. I mean, by the way, that's where car makers and battery suppliers are. So, of course, the money's going to go there. What are they doing with this money? How's it being used?
It is worth pointing out, though, but what this money is going to be used for is for a lot of the traditional automakers to retool and renovate plants so that they can make electric vehicles. You know, a big initiative of the Biden administration has been to get people and industry to shift more towards electronic vehicles, get away from gas and emissions and things like that. And this is some needed help in doing that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense to me. And even if the EV industry has stalled a little bit, that's more about infrastructure than the viability of these vehicles, right?
Right. But at the same time, it's a huge investment. And, you know, no pun intended, this might jumpstart things a little bit.
What's the news from Samsung at CNET.com?
Well, Samsung announced a whole bunch of new devices yesterday at its Unpacked event, including its first ever premium smartwatch and a new smart ring. And what's interesting about these devices, in addition to the fact that they are very expensive compared to the stuff Samsung currently makes, is that they will be, of course, powered by AI. And there's going to be a lot of number crunching and data analysis, most of it geared towards health and fitness.
What's an example of something an AI ring or watch will tell me?
Well, the idea is to, you know, take that biometric information that these devices collect, you know, things like heart rate and, how many steps you take, what kind of exercise you do, how your body reacts to all of that, and find ways to help people create better fitness plans or just get the most out of their workouts. AI lets, companies do data analysis at levels that are faster and more detailed than ever before.
I'm amazed that they can collect that much data. I mean, really, if you're wearing the device, there's no probe. It can measure your pulse and body temperature and movement. They can derive a lot of information from that, huh?
Yeah, for sure. The sensors in watches and rings really haven't changed so much in recent years. I mean, they've gotten more sophisticated. The technology, though, really, it's been kind of an evolution rather than a revolution. But AI allows them to just kind of do more number crunching. The thing is, a lot of it will be done in the cloud, which, you know, makes you kind of wonder about security and privacy, things like that. Samsung says it will be safe up there, but you really never know about these things.
So are these smart watches and rings then? I mean, are they computers as well and phones? Do I text with them or is it just a medical monitoring device?
Well, you can do all the usual, especially with the watch, texting and look at your email, play music, stuff like that. The Watch Ultra version is going to be $650. Their regular Galaxy Watch 7 is going to sell for $300. So, you know, whether you get the bang for your buck out of that might depend on you and, you know, how much of an exercise junkie you are.
Yeah. You think the market is going to appreciate that? That's not $1,000. I mean, a new phone or laptop will always cost you close to four figures. Is that a good price point or is that too high?
You know, I'm not sure if it'll catch on. I think the price point is about right because the Apple Watch Ultra, I think, is about $700. So this is kind of in the same lane is that.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. There is good news on the small business front. The General Assembly has passed and Governor Pritzker signed legislation that significantly increases tax credits for businesses that hire returning citizens. Returning citizens, that is, formerly incarcerated individuals. Elliot Richardson is the co-founder and president of the Small Business Advocacy Council. Elliot, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
Hey, John. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing wonderful.
Talk to me about who this benefits.
Yeah, you know, this is great. This is a great law that just passed. It's going to support small businesses struggling to hire employees. It's going to foster opportunities for formerly incarcerated individuals. It's going to proactively improve public safety, and it's going to actually save the state money because it's going to lower the cost of recidivism and create revenue. So this is going to help small businesses because it's going to dramatically increase the tax incentives that a business can get for hiring somebody who's been formerly incarcerated.
We
hear great. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what will happen is if a small business owner hires a formerly incarcerated individual, the tax credit that they can receive on their state taxes will increase from 5% of wages to 15% of wages. And the ceiling for that tax credit will go from $1,500 to up to $7,500. And that is a significant tax credit that could really help a small business offset the cost of on-the-job training for formerly incarcerated individuals.
How do you define a formerly incarcerated individual? Is it a certain kind of crime or a length of time?
Great question. It's somebody who's interacted, who was formerly incarcerated within the last 10 years. It does not distinguish the crime. So, you know, this will be eligible, and certainly it's up to the small business owner to determine whether or not they want to seek this tax credit, but it's really open.
I suppose people who have been incarcerated for small crimes or large crimes, if they have a record, then it's hard for them filling out an application, honestly, to get a job. Is that what happens?
Yeah, it's been very, very difficult. And hopefully, you know, this legislation was a collaboration between folks who support opportunities for formerly incarcerated individuals and for small business advocates. And what we want to do is build a bridge between these two communities, because a lot of the folks who are listening to your show right now, if they're small business owners or entrepreneurs, you know they're having trouble hiring employees.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's
mm-hmm.
still having trouble hiring employees. And this is going to supplement the workforce. So absolutely. I mean, that's the purpose of this, is to build that bridge and support small businesses at the same time.
I wonder how you connect the two. That is, does the program have a pool of potential candidates and businesses that are interested, or is it just catch as catch can?
You know what? That's a great question, and that's why being on your show is so important, and we're so thankful for that. We've got to get the word out. I mean, you've got folks who are formerly incarcerated, and they're in prison, and they're learning trades. They're getting educated. They're learning skills. Now, how do we connect businesses with them when folks get out of prison? That's what we're working on doing. So we're working with chambers of commerce. We're working with place-based organizations. We're working with folks who really have a bead on the small business community, and then we want to serve as a connector and make sure that these folks find one another. And it's mutually beneficial for everybody.
So they could be front-facing employees at a store, restaurant, bar, or they could be working in a factory or shop. Do you care what the job is that these people get?
I mean, there's really no horse in the fight for us in that respect, or in the race, I should say. Really, it's if somebody's got the skills, and if a business needs employees, let's make this connection. And when you talk about public safety, and we hear about that in Chicago, right? And we know that the real and perceived public safety issues are having a real impact. What a great way to improve public safety. Let's get folks jobs. Let's get them working. Let's get them working in local communities for local businesses, in disinvested communities. That's what we're trying to do here.
Formerly incarcerated individuals, the General Assembly has passed and the governor signed legislation that increases tax credits from 5% to 15%, up to $7,500 in discounts, tax incentives for small businesses that hire these individuals. If you want to know more, Small Business Advocacy Council, the smallbusinessadvocacycouncil.org is the website to go to. Elliot, stay in touch. This sounds like a good idea.
Well, thank you so much, and as always, thank you so much for having me on the show.
He is the co-founder and president of the Small Business Advocacy Council. This is WGN More Business News with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based medical tech startup Symbiosis is planning more expansion after receiving clearance from the Food and Drug Administration for its platform. The company uses artificial intelligence, spatial biophysics, and computer modeling to help cancer surgeons better see tumors using a platform called TumorSight. The platform allows surgeons to create a detailed 3D model of a patient's cancer. Part of the Symbiosis expansion includes the launch of TumorSight Plan, which provides surgical planning for early-stage breast cancer. Several big institutions are using the platform, including the Mayo Clinic. Chicago's downtown office vacancy rate hit a record high of nearly 26% in the first half of 2024. It jumped from 25% in the first quarter of the year. Real estate services firm CBRE says the downtown vacancy rate has hit new record highs in 13 of the past 15 quarters as remote work continues to be the trend. Cranes reports companies have collectively cut back on nearly 2 million square feet of office space over the past year. The office vacancy rate has also negatively impacted the retail environment of downtown Chicago. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
I got more business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And with Illinois being the number one soybean state in the country, this is not good news.
Soybean exports to date are $20.6 billion, a 29% decrease from the previous fiscal year.
More about that and why that is after I thank the Chevy, Silverado, and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, overall, U.S. ag export sales are down 5% from a year ago, but the big bulk commodities are down 18%. And
the main problem is soybean exports, and especially soybean exports to China.
USDA economist James Kaufman says it isn't that China has stopped buying beans, they're just not buying from us. They're getting them mostly from Brazil, which had a bumper crop and has competitive pricing. We do sell soybeans to other countries, though, including Mexico, the EU, and Egypt, for a total export number of
23.4 million metric tons, as opposed to 30.5 million metric tons the previous year.
Corn exports are doing better than beans, but still are in the red.
Corn is $9.1 billion for this fiscal year, which is a 7% decrease.
Let's move on to more positive news. It's National Blueberry Muffin Day.
Thank you. Yeah, I love a blueberry muffin. One of my favorite breakfast items with a cup of coffee, right?
Right. That's Abby Schilling, who grows lots of blueberries at the farm in southwest Michigan her dad started, Mick Klug Farm. And it's a good harvest, Abby?
It's going really well. It did start early, though. Earliest start date on record was June 18th, many, many years ago. And this year we started on June 17th.
And you can find those Southwest Michigan blueberries all over Chicago.
Yeah, any farmer's market we attend. We sell to several restaurants in Chicago that purchase them from us. We put them in our CSA boxes. We have a pretty robust CSA program.
And you've got a farm stand too?
We do in New Buffalo, Michigan. That's open 7 days a week.
So as you enjoy National Blueberry Muffin Day, you can also enjoy National Rainier Cherry Day and National Mojito Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Downtown Chicago and a stone's throw from here. If it wasn't for one building, I could see one of the best pizza places in the world. And that's not just me talking. 50 Top Pizza has named the 10 best restaurants in Chicago for pizza, and Roberts is number 10, first in the state of Illinois. In fact, the first in the Midwest is Roberts Pizza downtown. And they may be judged one of the top restaurants in the world, according to the people that do this sort of thing. Robert and Dana Garvey are in our studio right now. Congratulations to you two.
Thanks, and thanks for having us on.
Yeah. So just tell me a little bit about this ranking and where that comes from and what does that mean?
So this is an organization called 50 Top Italy. They send in, they rank pizzas all around the world, and they do rankings for each country. And they have inspectors that come in, unidentified inspectors come in and take a look at your pizza, at your at your restaurant, at your team, et cetera. And they give out the awards in the U.S. for the top 50, and we were number 10 on the top 50 in the U.S.
I see. And then how do we know the world ranking?
So that list, if you're 12 and above on that list, then you were automatically on the top 100 of the world, and those awards are given out in Naples, Italy in September, and we are looking forward to going there.
So you're going to be there for the ceremony?
Oh, yes. Yes, can't wait.
Business trip. I mean, you got to go. Does that review, is it just about the food or is it about the whole restaurant experience?
It really is about the whole restaurant. I mean, what makes Roberts really special is our team is remarkable, our customer service. The staff really just makes everybody feel at home. It's a beautiful environment. It's on the river. So it's a lot of different things that go into the rankings.
Now, you know, your location's lousy. People will never find it. Don't you know that?
Well, that's what I was told when I was opening it. People had recommended not opening there because it was behind the building. And Dane and I looked at it and said, well, we've got sunlight, we've got the water, and we've got a great pizza. So.
But it's not the river, the Chicago River. It's a slip just a block north of the river.
Yes, it's the Ogden Slip, which is basically Illinois and McClurg. And it's just a beautiful, quiet spot.
You live in the area.
Yes, we...
So is this, as I understand it, you wanted a pizza place you really liked downtown?
Yes. When I moved to Chicago, I had a slice a day habit back in New York City, and I was used to having pizzerias on almost every corner. And in Streeterville at the time, there wasn't a lot of pizza options, so I figured I would make it myself. It can't be that hard, and it took me 8 years of obsessive baking just for fun. And then we realized we had something special, and fast forward 20 years, we decided to open a restaurant.
So were you a restaurateur in New York? Is that your trade?
No. I actually have a background in theater. I was in the Merchant Marine for about 10 years as a marine engineer, and I was in hospitality. Dane and I used to run the Bitter End Yacht Club down in Virgin Gorda for about 25 years.
So you had an industrial oven at your house? Where were you cooking these prototype pizzas?
In my home oven, I have a really great convection gas oven at home, and I was able to tweak it a little bit, make the thermostat run a little hotter, and makes a great pizza.
How and when do you make the leap, though? You say, okay, I really like this pizza. The world will pay me for this. That's another level, isn't it?
It really is, and I must admit, I was a little tentative on that, but we had so many people over to our house, and so many, several of the top chefs in Chicago had come to our house and were invited in, and really told us that we had something special.
What kind of pizza is it? Describe it.
So we do an artisan thin crust style pie, and it's got a wild yeast sourdough starter, which I created 25 years ago when I first started making pizza. Basically, there's wild yeast in the air, and you can capture it using flour and water. But once you do, it's alive, and you have to feed it. So I've been feeding that starter for the last 25 years. It's the base of the recipe, and then I do a 2 to 3 day cold ferment and a very long rise, and it just makes a great, thin, crispy, chewy crust with an artisan bread flavor.
It's chewy enough. I mean, it's thin crust. It holds the toppings, but I like the texture of your dough. Is that important?
Oh, yes. And it's not just the recipe that does it. It's the way that we stretch it. It's the way that we bake it. Having that texture to it is really important.
What do you put on top of it then?
You know, we do, we love basic pizzas. We do, all of our pizzas have a California tomato sauce that we make in-house. Fresh mozzarella. We do great pepperoni. We use Slagle Farm for our pork. We make our own sausage. So we do all the basics, and then we do some more exotic pizzas. We do a cured duck breast pizza with duck from Smoking Goose in Indiana. We do a great seafood pizza, and we do a fennel pizza. So this pizza came up as a challenge to my staff: is how many different ways can we use a fennel bulb? And this pizza has a braised fennel, pickled fennel, fennel salumi from Salumi Chicago, and we bake that off, and then we finish it with fennel pollen, fennel fronds, and honey.
Robert Garvey is here, the founder of Robert's Pizza and Dough, anxiously anticipating his world ranking as one of the best pizza places on earth, but also already recognized as at least the 10th best pizza place in the United States, and the first one in Illinois. You know, you are surrounded, though, by some marquee pizza names in Chicagoland, but they are the deeper dish style pizzas. You don't do a deeper dish pizza?
No, we do the thin crust pizza. However, we did introduce a Detroit-style pizza this winter, which is baked in a blue steel pan. It's a nice, fluffy, light dough. It's probably about half inch to 3/4 inch thick, and it just makes a great pizza. It's surrounded with a cheddar cheese edge to it. It's a great pie, but only Tuesday nights we do that pie.
What do you sell the most of these days?
You know, our cheese pizza, which is named after my daughter because it's the only pizza she would eat when she was younger. And she came, you know, she grew up with as we developed the recipe. And the pepperoni. Our cup and char pepperoni is just a big seller.
What's your daughter's name?
Leah.
So the Leah pizza?
Yes.
Is the cheese pizza?
Is the cheese pizza.
And you sell a lot of that?
Oh, yes.
I mean, who doesn't want pizza with more than just cheese on it? But I guess if the crust is that good, you've got the right sauce and cheese, that's good enough, huh?
That's correct. People just love that pizza. They also use it as a base to build their own pizzas. So
do people come up with suggestions all the time, like you ought to do pineapple or pistachio? I suppose you're always fending off ideas like that.
Well, people come in all the time with ideas. I'm actually always happy to entertain them. I'm happy to have pineapple on pizza. I have found that pretty much no matter what the cuisine is, we can make a pizza out of it. We've done Thai pizzas. We've done Peking duck pizza. We've kind of taken that challenge on.
You're going to broaden it to sandwiches and pasta and stuff like that?
We do have some sandwiches. We make our own bread, and we have a terrific meatball sandwich. We do a chicken parm sandwich, and then we do a prosciutto and arugula sandwich. We have a series of nice salads, appetizers, meatballs, house-made arancini.
Robert's Pizza is on the Ogden Slip in Chicago. And if you're driving around, you're not going to see it. You have to go sort of behind Carson's or around the corner from the Target, which is in your neighborhood. But really, a lot of people live in your neighborhood. I mean, they're just living up in the sky. It's a very vertical village, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And we've lived in the neighborhood for over 25 years now and have watched it grow. So years ago, there were so many parking lots in this area, and now with all the high-rises here, it's a completely new neighborhood. Yeah. It's a great place to live.
Well, I recommend if you have not been there, you try it, and you will appreciate the experience. You know, I'm a fan of Winter's Jazz Club, too, which is your neighbor. In fact,
yes.
You were kind enough when we recorded our Mincing Rascals podcast at Winter's. You brought over a bunch of pizzas. This listener just texted in to say, Robert's Pizza is so good. I had it after the Mincing Rascals. This coming from a former part-time pizza delivery guy. So that's all the praise you need. Good luck in Naples, Italy. You'll have to report back to us.
We will, and thank you.
Yeah, Robert Garvey is here. Dana is too. They're the founders of Robert's Pizza and Dough Company, robertspizzacompany.com.